It is yours truly, Jerry, and what a show we have, because this week I have caught up with none other than the wonderful, talented man that is Mr. Art Supple. Art, of course, is a local man from Gortrue, well known throughout East Cork and West Waterford, and he joins me on today's show. And this evening we're joined in studio as well by his wonderfully, equally talented son, Shane. Art, good afternoon.
Hello, Jerry. It's lovely to be on the show and thank you for inviting me in.
It's an absolute pleasure. And Shane, good evening to you as well.
Good evening, Jerry. How are
Thanks for coming in and minding the old fella.
Yeah, sure, someone has to keep an eye on him at this stage.
Art, we'll go back to you for a second. Primary school teacher Miss Glavin took one of her six-year-old pupils, Arthur Supple, to Cork Opera House to see a musical. Neither of you realised the seed was sown for a glittering career on showbiz spanning six decades. Does that match your interest in music?
It is amazing. And isn't it a great thing? Miss Glavin, God rest her, was our national school teacher in Gortrue, in Clonpriest National School, as it is called. And, you know, isn't it a nice thing to know that somebody who was teaching children at that time was able to have a look at the class and I suppose see, you know, that there was some leaning towards music or singing or whatever you like to call it, that she, you know, wasn't very perceptive of her, that she was able to see that there was some little spark there, I suppose you
and
would call it.
In those days, was music an intricate part of school those days?
It was. You would have a singing class, you know.
It was on the curriculum.
Oh, absolutely. The Do Re Mi's and all the rest of it. And, you know, we would all be singing. And then, of course, we would have little school concerts as well, you know, the children's concerts and the school concerts. And we would all be taking part in that and putting in our little bit and trying to do the best we could. And that was where it started, I suppose.
And that was obviously the start of a very glittering career. You know, when things started to grow for you, did you maintain contact with Miss Glavin?
We did, to a certain extent, of course, but like as everything happens, you know, you move on and, you know, people drift and, you know, move on and different things. And Miss Glavin has passed her eternal reward, of course, many years ago now, you know. But as I said, in all fairness to the woman, it was great that she was able to see that there was some spark of talent or whatever you would like to call it, or ambition maybe in that direction, that she was able to see that there was some musical inclination, I suppose, in one of her six-year-old pupils. And I remember the opera that she brought me to see was called The Mikado.
Yeah. So you still have vivid memories of it.
That was the first one when you're taken as a six-year-old and brought up to see an opera in the opera house with all the lights and the glitter and the showbiz that's attached to it, of course, would have a lasting impression.
And when you were, like, when she went to your parents and asked, could she bring it to the show, did you know at that stage that you, did you have any inclination at that time that you might have had a future in music, or was it?
Well, sure, I suppose at six you wouldn't, but I was like any other kid, I'd be singing away and, you know, doing the best I could, shouting and roaring and singing like like a lot of kids would be doing, you know.
And what was it about the Mikado that you remember most?
I suppose the colour and the glitter. I mean, it is a good show, you know. The Mikado is one of the famous shows, and it's a light opera type of thing that people, you know, can look at and enjoy. And you don't have to be heavily into music to enjoy it as a spectacle. It's a very colourful show, and it's a good show to watch.
Right. And, like, music was in your family, I suppose, in a small way. Your two sisters played the piano, yeah?
They did, yes. They were both musically inclined and they were both very talented in their own right. And, you know, they learned the piano at school and the violin as well, of course. And they were both quite well able to sing. And my father, God rest him, before that was in had a band as well, you know. It was a fife and drum band, I think they had at that time, you know. And he was musically inclined as well. So I suppose, you know, there's a bit of music somewhere in the background as well.
And how many siblings did you have besides?
Just the two sisters, that's all, you know.
So you were the man among women.
Oh, I was. They took one look at me and they said, that's enough, we'll stop here.
And of course, you come from a farming background. What possesses a man in a farming upbringing to take on the world of show business?
I suppose, you know, nobody knows when they start out what they're going to wind up at, you know. And, I came from a farming background with mixed farming, small farm in East Cork, and there would be a lot of people in a similar situation. And we'd mixed farming, did a bit of beet, a bit of barley, a bit of seed barley, a few cattle and a few pigs and stuff like that. And when I was young then, you know, I was always interested in music and listening to the radio and listening to different artists singing and stuff like that. And I suppose it just grew from there, you know.
And you seemed destined for the family farm, but when you were at school in the CBS here in Yale, you joined the local band Pat Irwin's All-Stars.
That's right. Happy memories of that indeed. Pat, a very talented musician. And again, talking about tradition, his family goes back a long way with the Irwins. They were all very musically inclined, all those people. And they always had a band, you know. And Pat still has a band, of course. He's still playing away. And you know, we had very great memories of them, because when I started out, I was very green, of course, at the time, and I started with Pat and Pat Barron, God rest him, and Dick Prendergast and all the lads. And now we had a great old time together playing local dances and socials and dinner dances and things like that.
Because you were quoted as saying that the scene that time was all about social dancing, which was beginning to become more popular in the early 60s, yeah?
Yes, and you know, social dancing had a different kind of a meaning that time. Nowadays, people talk about social dancing as almost like strict tempo dancing that, you know, you have going on all the time in various venues throughout Ireland, really. But that time, it was a social situation where you had people would go along to socials, as they were called, where you would have a dance maybe from 9 until 2, and you could have a break in the middle and have the old cup of tea and a few queen cakes and maybe a cup of coffee or a sandwich or something like that. So it was a social get-together, you know.
Okay.
Rather than the dancing being social, the activity itself was actually a social get-together for people.
And of course, compared to, you know, sessions now and get-togethers now, drink was very rare at those social events, wasn't it?
Ah, yeah, drink wasn't the predominant thing. Was that people got together for just to socialise and be together and have a few dances. And you know, occasionally you'd have somebody from the floor would come up and join in and sing a song. And, you know, every venue you went to, you'd have one or two people who would be renowned for their ability to sing a song at one. You would invite them up and they'd sing a song. And it was a nice, relaxed, social atmosphere. But the drink really wasn't an important part of it as such at all.
And I wouldn't, looking at you now and having heard you for years and years perform, I wouldn't have taken you as a shy person, but you're quoted as saying music seems to bridge the gaps if you're shy. You were never shy, were you?
Well, I suppose, you know, I would in a certain manner, I suppose, you know, by degrees of comparison, I wouldn't be the most outgoing person in the world, but being on stage then gave you a license to kind of express yourself more freely, you know, and I think for anybody, And this would be a fairly wide philosophy of mine, anybody that would be shy or, you know, that would be a little bit inward looking, if they have the ability to go out and perform musically, I'm not talking about just singing, but play music or something like that, it's a great way to express themselves and gives them a certain amount of freedom, you know.
Right.
And I think it's good for anybody to be able to do something like that, because if you are shy or if you are a little bit, you know, when you're reared in the country, you know, you're like I was, you know, I think maybe you're kind of given a set of values as a kid to know your place and to to hold your own counsel, and you would do that, you know. But nevertheless, when it came to performing then and going on stage, you had the license, so to speak, to get up there and express yourself and do the best you could and try and be a different type of person, I suppose.
And just like you have to thank Miss Glavin, your former principal of the school, Tony Arangi came along then. Am I pronouncing that, Tony Arangi?
Tony Arangi. Miss Glavin, incidentally, wasn't the principal. Mr. Birmingham was the principal of the school, but she was our school teacher and a very beloved one indeed. Tony Arangi came as a drummer then.
He was the original drummer with the Victors.
With the Victor Show Band.
They were really the catalyst for your success, wasn't it?
They were, because that was a professional outfit, you see. And when we went on the road as a professional band, and it was like what you would call a manufactured band nowadays. We didn't start out as a semi-professional band and progress from there. We started out from day one as a professional outfit, because the guys that were in charge of the band, Chris St. Ledger, God rest him, he has passed to his eternal reward in the meantime. He was a band leader, and he was tasked with going out and by the people who had financed the band, and he was asked to put a band together. So he went and he sourced different musicians and people, and he was looking for a singer, and he came to East Cork and he was auditioning people all over the country. So they thought that I would be the guy that could fit the bill for what they wanted to do. And Tony Orangi was the drummer with the original band. And Tony was a great influence on me because he was a very steadying influence. And he was very experienced as well. Even though he was only similar age to myself, he had had a lot of experience with professional bands before that. So his advice was always good.
And did you look up to him as a mentor?
Oh, absolutely. Because of his experience. Oh, I did indeed. I took him very seriously.
He's quoted as saying, in 1963, we were looking for a lead singer. This young, tall, good-looking guy who auditioned for us, Art Supple, was just what we needed. And boy, he could sing. They're his words, not mine.
Well, they're his words. We leave it. We leave it at
that. Which part would you disagree with? Being tall or being good looking?
Who am I to argue with him? I know Tony is still a very good friend of mine and a great guy. He's living down in Shanagarry and he still plays a bit of music and he enjoys meeting the people and, you know, he's a great character.
And of course, like as we mentioned, it was the dance halls really were filling up. The new generation in Ireland were flocking to dance halls all over the country. TV was in its infancy really then, wasn't it, 1963?
Absolutely in its infancy, because the first show that we did would have been in, the first television show that we did was on the 13th of November 1963. And on that particular show that night that we did, it was a half-hour show. It was called The Showband Show. Right. And the compere on the show was a guy called Paul Russell, a very talented man too. He was the compere on the show. And we did, like the showbands would do a half-hour show, and there would be a little intermission or a spot in the middle of the show in which they would introduce maybe a group or a different act. And on the night that we were on, the act that was introduced in the middle of the show were the Beatles. So that was my first...
I remember that. You were quoted as saying you shared a show with the Beatles, but that was kind of pushing it to the limits, wasn't it?
Well, it was. It was the showband show, and the Beatles were the spot that was in the middle of it, you know?
And you, during your glittering career, of course, you became very good friends, and you described them as peers. Brendan Boyer, Dickie Rock, Joe Dolan, Big Tom, Larry Cunningham. You know, like, does the list is endless, really, isn't it?
It is. Well, they were all the guys that were in the business. And Touchwood, thanks be to God, a lot of them are still there. Dickie Rock will be doing a show with me now on the 19th of this month in the City Hall. We're doing a big showband show up there that night. It's called Rolling Back the Showband Years. So you can imagine what that is. Joe McCarthy and myself and Johnny Carroll, Dermot Hagerty, and Katty Durkin are on, and it's going to be a great night in the City Hall.
Well, we went to see Dickie Rock 3 or 4 weeks ago down in Killarney.
Yes.
And he's still able to...
Dickie is magic. So I believe this is his last show on Cork, the one that he's doing with me on that particular night now coming up.
We're going to take a quick music break there, and we're going to play one of your songs. You have a new CD out at the moment, of course, Art Supple, So Carolina Rose, right?
Yes.
I'm going to play the second track on that one, which is Angeline, Would You Like to Dance Again? Can you tell me what inspired this song? How did this come about?
Well, it was just a song that I liked. I heard a guy called Ed Bruce, an American country singer, singing this song, and I recorded it in a studio with a guy called Stephen Smith up in County Down. And Stephen is a very talented musician. He has his own band on the road, and he's a great man to work with in the studio. And I was up there with him, and I did this CD, and we did this particular song, and I liked the way it turned out. So we put it on the CD, and, you know, that was how that came about.
And speaking of CDs, of course, it'd be remiss of me to mention Shane, you're gone into it now as well. You have a CD out as well, have you?
Six different CDs.
Oh, you have
I do a lot of songwriting as well. So lots of different people have recorded songs, including Dad. It's part of the family trade at this stage. Okay. You know.
Do you hope someday to be as famous and as...
God, no. No.
Which of his traits did you inherit? Was it the tall or the
shyness,
dark or the handsome?
Shyness, I think, would be the big one. When it comes to singing, I've worked with different bands. I've worked with Brendan Shine, Paddy O'Brien. I've worked with a lot of the country bands around the country as well down through the years. And I still say to this day that one of the finest on-stage performers is Dad, you know. I mean, it's easy to sit here and say, like, that, you know, a family member is able to do A, B or C, but, like, I've worked with a lot of bands, as I said, and I've learnt an awful lot from watching Dad on stage. enough to know that that's not what I want to do. It's as simple as that.
And apart from he being a wonderful performer, like growing up with him as a dad, was it difficult to share, you know, the life of a father with a show band?
No.
Success. He was able to mix the two, was he?
We never had any issues, hassles, or otherwise. I mean, I was smart enough to know that when it came to being on the road and listening to what he said, he knew what he was talking about. So I used to always take advice. And we compartmentalized what we were doing when we worked together, we say, in the different bands and stuff like that. I would be in charge of the gear, the PA, the van, the equipment and stuff like that. So whatever I would say in relation to that was the rule. And when it came to the onstage performances and the songs we were doing, whatever Dad would say was the rule there. So we each had a kind of a different role to play, and it worked for both of us.
But I suppose going back to your dad's earlier days when you were growing up as a young fella, it was like a man going out to work during a 9-to-5 job. It was your dad's job, yeah?
It was, yeah. But I went on the road at 14, so I mean that's 40 years ago now, you know what I mean? So like the simple truth of the matter is for the first 14 years of my life, we can discount the first two. I don't remember much about those, but from 2 to 12, you know, Dad was going to work. And I remember like you wouldn't see him for possibly, you know, a couple of weeks at a time, depending on where the touring was going on. But again, I remember like as a child growing up, at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, sometimes later, you'd go downstairs to have breakfast and there'd be 14 or 15 people around the table, all having breakfast, musicians and everything like that. So it was normal, you know, in our house at that time. Music was a big part of it. There was a record collection that Dad would have, and we used to listen to all sorts of strange music that my friends wouldn't have been into, if you know what I mean. So
was he a good teacher, or were you a very good pupil?
I was an excellent pupil, you know. I mean,
so he wasn't a good teacher.
That's what he says anyhow.
No, the other side of it is a part of it, like, is we've always worked side by side together. I mean, we played hurling for God knows how long, you know.
Sorry, and
I
mean, come to that in a minute.
You know, like, we've shared an awful lot of things in life together. I've been very lucky, you know, in that I've been able to work, play, you know, share a lot of things with my dad outside my own normal kind of social life.
Do you find it easier to follow your father into the showbiz business? Like, if he had become a carpenter or a plumber, would you, you know what I'm saying? Would you have taken up that trait? Like, is it easier when he's in show business?
Yeah.
You know, is it easier to follow your father's footsteps?
It is, of course. I remember, like, a couple of years ago, Ireland's Eye, the magazine, done an article about the two of us, you know what I mean? And they were comparing other singers whose children had gone on to follow in their footsteps as well. And it's like if Dad was a block layer, I'd be a block layer. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
You know, you'd follow along those
It's
trades.
A generation thing.
It's a trade thing that, you know, my father was this. That's fairly common in things. But in our case, Dad's job was a little bit different, is in that he was a singer and entertainer. He was in a show band travelling around the country. So, like at 9, 10, 11, 12 years of age, for me, meeting the likes of, we'll say, you know, Brendan Boyer, whoever it would be, you know, because they'd be coming to the house, you know, different things like that. It was normal, totally normal.
Just took it in your
Yeah, style. And as I got older, people were saying to me, you actually met such a person and you saw such a person. I was going, yeah, should they have breakfast in our house? It was a very normal part of growing up for me. And that's the way it was.
And what about, say, if he had taken a different route, you know, plumber or carpentry, or if he had stuck to the farming? Because he's in the show business, does competition kick in at all, you know, when you have a father and a son, you know, playing together, performing together?
I know.
Do you obviously you aspire to being as good as your father? Do you ever hope to be better than him, or do
No, like, we've, again, it's coming back to, like, the music business is a strange thing, you know, like, there's very little competition. You know, through all the bands, do you know what I mean? And all the different bands. And the reasoning being is everybody does something different. Mm-hmm. I'm a better songwriter than Art, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's where I choose to work. I'd be better in the studio at producing.
Well, he's nodding
like
there in agreement. Do you agree with that, Art?
Absolutely, yes.
And is that, again, a generational thing or what is it?
Well, I suppose as far as we were concerned with the show bands, we were so busy trying to cover the hits of the day is that we didn't spend an awful lot of time
writing our own material, because at that time people, the whole thing was so new to the people at that time. They didn't need new songs. All they wanted to see was a reproduction of the existing hits of the day. And that's what we did as a show band, cover versions of a lot of stuff. Yes, I wrote some stuff myself, and not an awful lot of it. But what Shane would have been doing then in later years was writing his own material. And of course, the whole music scene has become more susceptible to self-pen stuff nowadays. You know, at that time, like I said, we were up to our ears trying to reproduce what was already out there on the airwaves and what people wanted to hear. Then later on, when that show band boom ended, people started writing their own material, and it went on from there. So Shane is a lot better at that than I am, and he's written some very, very good songs.
And Shane, if I can ask him before we do take that track that I mentioned 3 minutes ago, does it make it easier to pen or to write a song, you know, knowing that your father is possibly going to sing it, or, you know, does it, you know what I'm saying? Like, is it easier to write a song with that mindset in place, or...
No, it makes no difference.
You just write it for yourself.
The song is a creative process. Do you know what I mean? It's like someone painting a picture. Just because their father might have been a famous painter doesn't mean the picture that they're going to paint is going to be any different. Yeah. And what happens with a song is it can be an idea that'll germinate in your head over time, or you'll sit down at a piano and start playing a few chords, pick up a guitar, play a few chords, and all of a sudden an inspiration will strike. The advantage of Dad being a singer for me is it has opened so many doors. That's the advantage. When someone would say, I remember as a youngster starting off, we'll say I was interviewing for different bands and things like that. And because I was very young at the time, you could be discounted immediately. That young fellow is too young. But when you'd say, I'm only, you know, my father is out. So all of a sudden, the attitude would change. And, he must know something about
doors
the business.
Doors open straight away.
And doors would open straight away. And I found like that in the world of media and entertainment and stuff like that, that, you know, when you tell people that Art was your father, they'd say, all of a sudden doors were opening. I got to get on radio because of who Dad was. I got to get on television because of who Dad was. I was in different songwriting seminars because of who my father was. So that point of view, that can't be denied. Do you know that, like, I was very lucky that it opened a lot of doors for me. Once the doors were open, I would have to prove myself, whereas other people of my own age, even better ability than me, would never have had the chances that I had, because their father wouldn't have been as well known as Art.
Okay, so we're still banging them out, Art Supple, fair play to you. Are you ever going to stop?
we've no notion of stopping as yet.
No notion of stopping. And it must be immensely full of pride for you to be involved or associated with music produced by your father as well, is it?
Oh, it is. Of course it is. It's like, I suppose you could say it's the family business. Do you know what I mean? And like, for anybody to be able to work with their father, whether they're a carpenter, a block layer, or whatever, it's always, you know, there's a certain amount of satisfaction at the end of every show, at the end of every album, at the end of every trip or tour, whatever it would be, that it's just, you know, I'm lucky. You know, not a lot of people would get to spend as much time with their own father as we get to spend together. And yet, I don't think we've had a serious or crossword in 30 years in regards, you know, the walk side of things.
He's bigger than me, you know.
You know, on the hurling pitch, all right, we've had a few crosswords. You know, he's got me into the height of trouble a couple of times.
Are there venues or, you know, events that, you know, your father comes along and he says, well, you get your itinerary for the next couple of weeks. Are there venues or gigs or places that you say, oh, you know, not here again, Nick?
I'm going to go back a little bit here, but for me, one of the most endearing places that I can ever remember playing would be in a place called Mortal. It's down there beside Carrick and Shore, and there was a gentleman there, Paddy Mansfield was his name, and himself and Dad go back a long, long way. But we've always played down there at different times for different festivals. It's a small rural venue, but by God, do they break the laws of reality when things go on down there. One occasion we finished up playing in the bar there. It's supposed to finish at 12 o'clock normal time, but at 2 o'clock we finished playing in the bar. And we'd only finished playing when Paddy came along and said, lads, would you set up outside? And he had a tractor pulled up outside the bar on the side of the street. And we started playing there till the guards came up from Tramore at 5:30 in the morning asking us to stop. Places like that. Do you know, I mean, We've been behind the Iron Curtain 6 months after the Berlin Wall came down. We were in Russia. Do you know what I mean? We got to see some amazing places. So every place is different. I remember as a child growing up, touring Germany, we were on different American air bases. You know, I got to see all these helicopters, planes, pilots, jeeps, tanks and all that. And, you know, so many different places. And we got to meet so many stars because Dad would be playing for different functions for GAA functions, we'll say, All-Star Awards, the Rose of Tralee Festivals, and you get to meet so many people. There was a place we used to play in Manchester on Cheetham Hill, the Irish Centre, where Niall Quinn and Paul McGrath, and when they were playing at Man City at the time, used to come in order to take a break from the people outside in the hall, they used to come up to the band room during the break and sit down and have the old chat and the crack. And at that time, Niall Quinn was huge in soccer. So, you meet all these famous people and, you know, you take it for granted. But because of music, I got to travel most of the world. I got to see most of the world and, you know, I'm still here.
Wow. Speaking of still here, I have to take a break, lads, because the clock has beaten us. We're gone way over an ad break. I'm going to take an ad break and we'll be back after more and we'll have a chat again, yeah?
Of course.
So welcome back to part two of today's Jury's People. We are joined in the studio by Art Supple and his son Shane. And now we're joined on the telephone by a very, very good friend of Art's down through the years, Paddy O'Brien. Paddy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, and I'm delighted to pay a compliment to one wonderful person. I must say that he is the gentleman of entertainment. I've been dealing with entertainers for the last 50, 60 years, and I would rate Art up on the top. He's courteous, he's manly, he's friendly, and this is on and off the stage. There's no hypocrisy whatsoever about him. I had the pleasure of having him at the over 60s last June, and the way he's treated, and this is brought back to my attention later on, the way he spoke to the over 60s, the way he spoke to the elderly people in the audience. He's a real gentleman. And I know him many, many years, and I would admire him for years. I've been a lot of his shows down through the years. And I would just say to people that that man has done an awful lot for charity. It doesn't appear on the Scott Journal or the Examiner or the Echo. He does a lot of it privately, organising people in distress, what have you. And he's a wonderful, wonderful person. And I would say that in regards to his talent of entertainment, he's up with the best there. He's up with the best. The night at the City Hall, I was meeting people the following 2 days after, and they usually make a comment about Johnny should have won. That was forgotten about. They were just saying, wasn't Art Supple fantastic? He got the people dancing. It was just wonderful altogether. Another thing I admired him about this, about him rather about Art, is that his dedication to the Pioneer Movement. He's a pioneer. Many of your listeners now might be aware of this. And he's a real, genuine pioneer. I heard of a story many years ago, he was in London. I don't know what ballroom he was playing in, and they arrived out tours beforehand, and he suddenly discovered that he didn't have his pioneer pin, and he got a taxi back to the hotel to get his pioneer pin. And as I said, he's a gentleman of gentlemen, and I don't know Shane, and Shane, your father is a gentleman, and you should be honoured and proud to have a dad like him. He's a very, very caring man, and the people in the country absolutely love him, love him, love him. Actors out there on the top, and I wish him well.
Paddy, thank you very much indeed for all those very kind words. I just hope that we can live up to the expectations of some of what you have said there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's always been a pleasure, Paddy, working
thank
with you.
God.
And indeed the people that you have on board there and the over 60s talent, you know, they're all very, very talented people. And, you know, they're like ourselves. Why wouldn't we talk to them? Why wouldn't we be part of the situation
thanks
that they're in? They're terrific people. And long may your success continue with that, because you're doing tremendous work, Paddy, yourself. And have
thank
been
you
for many years.
And Shane, I'm sure you want to reply to his kind words as well.
I remember like growing up watching Paddy doing different things with for as long as I can remember. He's involved in the over 60s, and he's been promoting music, and someone like that says something like he has said today, you can do nothing but sit and listen to it and take it in, you know what I mean?
Paddy, Shane wants to know, can he enter the over 60s soon there, actually?
Well, he's a long ways to go yet. He's about 19. Shane, keep in mind, you've got to be over 60s.
That's only a few years away.
Stop rehearsing now, and I'll send you an application form for a couple of years' time, Shane.
Good man, Paddy. I'd appreciate that.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to pay tribute to her.
A pleasure to talk to you, Paddy. Thanks for your kind words, and we'll talk again soon, all right? Wonderful words there from the wonderfully, I suppose, influential and talented man in his own right, Paddy O'Brien, doing great things to the over 60s, deeply involved as well, of course, at the Irish Heart Foundation, doing Trojan work for them as well, yeah?
Yes, he's a great community worker, you know, and he pulls people together from all walks of life.
He has that ambience to get them around.
Absolutely, and
yeah.
he creates a window of opportunity for people who wouldn't otherwise have it. You know, people that would like to sing a few songs can come along in the Over 60s Talent Competition and come along and get up on a stage and sing, and it's a great opportunity for those people.
Before the break there, we mentioned the infancy of the TV era, and like, you've travelled, you mentioned there before the break, Shane, about, you know, being behind the Iron Curtain and years after it came down. Travelling to the US, Toronto in Canada, places like the Lacana Ballroom in Toronto have special memories here, yeah?
It does indeed, because that particular venue, it was a snapshot of what had gone before, I suppose, because when we arrived, I think it was probably about 1966 in Toronto. We were the first show band to play in Toronto, and we played in a place called Locarno Ballroom. And it was an absolutely amazing experience for us, because before we went on, there was an orchestra sitting down, I think maybe about 12 people in the band, sitting down with music stands, and they were playing excellent music, and the people were dancing around the floor, and everything was nice and sedate, and as it should be. And we came on then as a show band, and it was the first show band that had appeared there, and we arrived along with our red suits, jumping around the place and playing pop music of the day. And it was, you know, a total change from what the people had been used to. So when I say it was a snapshot of the broader scene, that's exactly what it was, and it all happened overnight, and it was very successful for us, and we got lots of offers to stay there and continue our careers in Toronto at the time, but you know, we all had our ties with home and we had to come back. But I'm just making the point that it was a transition from the sitting down band to a show band, and it happened right there before our eyes, you know, on stage.
Well, that brings me nicely to my next point, because you're quoted as saying being in the band was like having a calling card to see the world. We got to see places we'd never get to see otherwise. They echo the sentiments of your son Shane, who said that he's seen people and met people and seen places that he possibly wouldn't have seen if you had chosen a different career. However, you associate yourself with, you're saying, despite all the globe-trotting, the Irish show band scene remained your bread and butter, really, didn't it?
Absolutely it did, because that's what we did for a living, you know, and it was a great way of life as well, because you had your colleagues within the business, and as Shane mentioned earlier on about competition, it wasn't so much competition as the fact that you had to try and strive to raise the bar a little bit yourself all the time and try and keep up there with the competition that was going on around you, you know. So we didn't regard our colleagues as people that were in competition with us. We just regarded them as people who were in the same business as ourselves, and we were all striving to make the business better and trying to get a little bit of an edge on whatever we were trying to do and keep the bar up there and keep raising the bar. And, you know, I wouldn't really regard it as competition as such. It was that's just the way it was, you know.
Did you say that you were packing in crowds of over 2,000 people every night in Redbourn down the road, Crosshaven? Like, locally, where was the favourite venue that you would have played?
Well, I suppose Redbourn would have to be my favourite place, you know, as a local venue. But why wouldn't it? Because all my friends and neighbours and relations and cousins and colleagues and people we went to school with, and, you know, they would all be there on the night that we would play. And it was always great to see them.
And is there always a part, you know, when you go foreign, in, like you're just back from the States last week, was it?
Yes.
When you're away in places like America, Canada, anywhere you go in the world, do you miss home? Like, there's nowhere like home at the end of the day, so there isn't?
No, there isn't. But I mean, you know, if you can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen, I suppose. And a part of the business is travel. You've got to travel, because you can't stay playing in the same venues all the time. So you have to move out, and you have to expand your horizons a little bit and play in different venues, and you gain experiences from that, and you gain also, you know, from a practical point of view, it creates a bigger scene that you can work in. So, you know, it's a part of the business. But yes, I love traveling. I love seeing different places. But, you know, I've always kept my feet in the ground. I've always wanted to be associated with home, and I love being at home.
When the Victor Shaw band disbanded, you joined Brendan Shine's band, yeah?
That's right, yeah.
You describe him as the real showman.
Brendan is a great character and a very sound fellow, you know, and he's going tremendously strong still, and he's a great following all over the country and other countries as well. And I meet up with him occasionally, and we have a great old relationship. Brendan is a very sound fellow, you know, and he's from a farming background himself as well. And I suppose we had things in common going down through the years, you know, that we were able to speak the same lingo, and we never had any disagreements or anything at all. We were always able to get on together, and, you know, I would regard him as a totally... He's a good businessman as well as being mm-hmm. a fine entertainer, you know.
You also did a bit of GA hurling with St. Eaters, your beloved St. Eaters. The two of you did that, did you? Shane, what happened there?
There was nothing happened. He should have retired 30 years earlier, is all I can say. We did. We played together, I suppose. Jeez, just 20-something-odd years. I think I was 15 or 14 when I played my first junior match. And we played that through... I only retired a couple of years ago, and you not long before me. But I suppose it's 25, 26 years we played together on the same team.
And, of course, you got to meet the late, great Jimmy McGee then, who organised charity football games with teams of celebrities. That must have been a highlight as well, was it?
It was indeed, and I'll tell you why, because it gave us the opportunity. You know, no matter what world you're in, you know, no matter what you do for a living, you always have your heroes, you know. And for me, one of the greatest heroes in my lifetime, of course, would have been Christy Ring, you know.
Okay.
And, you know, Mick O'Connell in the football world, you know, and also in the music business. But Jimmy McGee was one of these people. He pulled all of these guys together, you know, and we got the opportunity. We played regularly on Monday nights. We would get together with a bunch of people who were amalgamated from the show business, from sport. And, you know, when we'd get together, we had the opportunity of meeting up with these guys that would have been our heroes in other walks of life. As I said, great sportsmen and boxers, football, rugby, soccer. You know, and Jimmy McGee pulled all of these people together, and we were lucky enough to be able to meet up with a lot of our heroes through Jimmy McGee.
What instilled your interest in politics? In 1999, you decided to run for the Cork County Council elections.
Yes, I did. I suppose I always had an interest in politics. It's hard to say where it came from. I think, it might have been a kind of a family background thing, you know. And I always had an interest in politics. And even at a young age, I would have been involved in, you know, in the local common, as it was called, out and go through. And it progressed from there. And you would keep an interest in politics. You'd be observing the different politicians and how they were performing in Dáil-Éireann, etc. And then there came a time in my life in 1999 when I was approached by the Fianna Fáil party and asked if I would stand for Fianna Fáil for the Cork County Council. So I was flattered, of course, to be even considered. And I put my name forward, and I was selected to go forward, and I was lucky enough to get a seat, thanks to the various people in East Cork who voted for me and voted me in, and I was returned as a member of Cork County Council, and I really enjoyed it. It was a great experience, and it also allowed you to reach out and explore different possibilities for people, and you would see the real world out there, because, you know, everything isn't always what it seems to be on the surface. And when you're involved as a member of the county council, you would get various calls at various times of the day or night with people with very far-reaching problems. And in some cases, you could help them. And in some cases, unfortunately, you couldn't.
And was it hard to marry the two? Was it hard to marry the political life with the showbiz and entertaining life?
Strangely enough, it wasn't, because, you know, while you would be travelling around with the band and doing different things, you could still keep... It's down to time management, basically, Jerry, you know, and you just put a certain amount of time aside to try and deal with each and every part of your career or whatever it is that you were doing. But it was very rewarding to be a part of the County Council because, as I said, there were things that you could do and positions that you could create by explaining to the people in County Hall what was necessary for somebody in Ballymacode or Gortrue or Yall or wherever it might have been. And you were able to bring, you know, grassroots feelings and needs to the higher authorities.
To the tables above yes. in the County Hall.
And like I said, while you wouldn't always be successful, I'm sure in any business that you go into, if you have a certain degree of success, that
would you consider it as a learning curve? Having spent 5 years in the
absolutely, company. It's a learning curve because you go in cold, you know, and you don't have any previous experience of it and you're dropped in here and then you have to learn. On
Shane, speaking of learning, you're sitting at home and you're watching your father, a highly successful showbiz entertainer, and he comes home and he says, "Just that's I'm thinking I'm going for politics." Did that shake you? Did it frighten you? Did it inhibit you?
No. I remember going down to one of the shops here in Yall that evening and buying an ordnance survey map of East Cork and sitting down planning where we were going to put the posters. That was the practicality of it. There was no thought, no, you know, this is what he's going to do. Grant, go for it. As a child growing up in the environment I was, like, I was very lucky in that whatever we as children, my siblings and myself, wanted to do, we were encouraged, go ahead and do it. Why not? What's to stop you? Whether it was Irish dancing, whether it was singing, whether it was swimming, hurling, football, rugby. I've played every sport known to man and always encouraged to do so. So when someone comes home and says politics is the next one, grand, yeah, let's go for it. So it didn't come as a surprise. Our house was always political in that Dad would be going to common meetings. My grandmother, her side of the family would have been very political as well down through the years, if you know what I mean. So there was a couple of members of the Dáil and things like that on that side of the family. So it didn't come as a surprise. I mean, in our house, very little comes as a surprise when someone makes an announcement.
Do you know, like, looking at you there, and you're so close to your dad and you're in awe of him, and obviously no matter what he decided to do, you were going to back him anyway.
Oh, yeah.
Going forward now with you and your family, would you encourage show business and would you be as supportive to your family or to your younger generations?
It's a little bit different. And this is going to sound very, I won't say racist, but I've daughters. Okay. And up on a stage is not a place for a girl. It's a hard okay. business. What I mean by that is, like, we'll say when I was with Dad on the road travelling, you know, you were put into a room, you were given a room to change inside. So you had five or six lads all in a room changing. Yeah, but if you have a girl in the band and lots of girls, and I know lots of the ladies that work in the business, right. They'll tell you the same thing. It can be awkward. Not so much for the ladies themselves, but for the fellas around them, if you know okay. what I mean.
If they came home and said they were going over with a musician or marrying a musician, would you object or would you enhance
it? I'm cute enough. If my daughter tells me something, I'll keep my mouth shut. I have two daughters, do you know what I mean? So, like, for them, I wouldn't see the musical career as a good choice. But if they made it, I've never backed down from anything they've done. And again, it's from my own upbringing. Whatever you want to do, go and do it, you know. Become yourself. You have to be your own person.
Yeah.
And like, I've learnt that from Dad, that nothing is impossible. If you want to do something, go and try it, and you can be successful at whatever you want to do. It doesn't have to be what I've done, or it doesn't have to be what Dad has done. If one of my daughters said she wants to become a chef, I'd say go for it, you know. If another daughter says she wants to become a psychologist, go for it, you know, whatever it would be. I'd have no objections with it, and the same with my own grandkids. I'd be saying the same thing to them, do you know what I mean? Go for it.
And that's important once they're happy.
Yeah. I mean, and again, it's something I've learned from growing up, you know. Yeah.
Because you didn't know any different, did you?
No, that was the normal. I mean, yeah. We could have conversations around the dinner table in relation to anything. We were able to ask questions. We were able to be ourselves, and we weren't punished or told that you must do this, you must do that. If I had said, out of all the family, I'm the only one who went on the road as a musician. Do you know what I mean? So, like, there was no one forced into it. There was no one. And even then, I suppose, it was just the way it was. The other family
members. But how many children did you have?
Yeah, I've got six altogether.
Six altogether. Yeah. And is Shane the only one that took up the...
Shane is the only one that became involved in the music business. All the rest of them are musically inclined, you know. And Sean had his own band as well. But he's moved away from that now. He still plays a bit of guitar. That's the youngest son. And you know, Sonia also played saxophone at a very high level as well. Another very musically inclined daughter also. So, you know, like, should the old music, I suppose, it runs in the genes and it runs in the family. So if a person chooses to make that their career, the best of luck to them, you know.
Right. And if not, you're not going to push it on.
Absolutely not, no.
We're nearing the end of the show, you'd be delighted to hear. At this stage, as we sit here today, like, all the places you've played and all the people you've met throughout the world and throughout Ireland, like, there has to be a single highlight, is there, of your career so far?
I suppose, you know, the simple fact that we're still able to do what it is as a chosen career. It's like a point that Shane made earlier on in the conversation, saying that we were lucky to be able to work together as father and son. You know, there are lots of families out there and they don't have that opportunity. And with the rest of my family, I didn't have the opportunity to work with them side by side. But yeah. I've had a great opportunity to work with Shane down through the years. And that was a good thing. But the highlight for me is the fact that, thanks be to God, I'm still... as the song says, reasonably upright on the ground, and I'm able to enjoy what I do. And
you're the right side of the sod.
And we're very lucky to be able to do that and to get out there and get up on stage and sing a few songs and entertain people and help to dispel the blues for an hour or two at night for people. And I suppose if there's nothing else that we can contribute to making the world a better place to live, the fact that we get out there and sing a few songs and help people to...
make people smile.
Makes people smile for forget their worries and cares for a little while. That's what it's all about as far as I'm concerned. That's the bit of talent that I have, or the bit of, you know, everybody, I suppose, has their own contribution to make to mankind. And I suppose as far as I'm concerned, if there's nothing else other than that, I'm lucky to be able to still do it.
Shane, what about you? Any highlights that stand out in your mind?
There's so many, but one that does stand out in my mind was Finsbury Park, London. I can't remember what year it was, but we were the closing act. And
Dad is smiling, it must be good.
No, but it's like there was two lads from y'all actually in the band as well, Kieran McCarthy and young Bobby Lee and myself and Dad, and we were the closing act, and all day long they'd been listening to kind of country music and stuff like that and you know, Irish stuff. And the first song we'd done that night was Whiskey in the Jar by Thin Lizzy. And I think there was roughly 35,000 people at this thing and we were on stage and Art was on the wings, and I'll never forget, we just started off with the intro, Bobby Lee and guitar, that Thin Lizzy intro. And all the sound engineers that had been there on the day were from rock bands and things like that, but they were doing this Irish festival, so they weren't paying much notice. But as soon as they heard the first notes, they all stood up and the crowd went mental, you know, and within 2 minutes of out running on singing the Whiskey in the Jar song, the place just erupted. And it's an impressive sight when you see 35,000 people standing in front of you all going mental. You
know, at an outdoor concert on a sunny day.
and like, that's just one highlight for me. There's been many, but that's just one that's been...
Yeah, that's the one that sticks out in your mind. Any thoughts or plans on hanging up the microphone at?
None whatsoever. No,
you'll keep going as long as you can.
It's a little bit like the hurling, I think. I played for, you know, as long as it was necessary to fill a spot, and I feel the same way about the music. As long as I can contribute something to the old music game, I'll stay at it.
Two questions that I'm asking all my guests, and I'm sorry for putting them on you. Your pet hate in life?
My pet hate in life? I don't know, I suppose... Everybody have their own way of looking at things, and as far as I'm concerned, people that run down what they do, you know, I've never had any time for that. There was always a certain amount of people within our business, and they would say, "Oh my God, how do you do that? You're playing in cold, drafty marquees. You're driving all over the country. You're eating ham sandwiches, you know, as a stable diet." And I never had any time for that kind of thought. If you can't stand the heat, as I said earlier, get out of the kitchen. If you don't like that, it's a part of the business. And if you're doing something, do it and be in it and be a part of it. But don't be in it and be complaining about it. If you don't like it, move on. Do something else.
Shane, any pet hate that you in the world?
No, No. Too many.
One question that I hate asking people, but I have to ask it because it's part of my program. Art Supple, how would you like to be remembered?
Ah, sure. I suppose I'd like to be remembered as somebody who tried to do the best they could. As musically, I think maybe whatever bit of talent I was given the day I was born and that I carried with me throughout my life, that I used it to the best of my ability to try and make the world a little bit of a better place for an hour or two for people.
You certainly made our world a better place for the last hour. Lads, thanks a million. Shane, thanks for dropping in and giving us such an insight. I suppose the one thing I'm taking from today's programme is the unity between the two of you. It's inseparable, really.
And well, we'll say that while he's here. Anyway.
Try to get the ball off us on the holding pitch.
Lads, it's been a pleasure. It's been an absolute pleasure, actually. And I thank you for sharing it with us. And I'm going to play out with the title track from your new album, Art. I haven't even time to play Noreen Bawn. I haven't time to play the show band. What do we call it?
Show bands on parade.
Oh, we'll have to find that. But I'm going to play out with the title track from your new album, and it's called So Carolina Rose. In 30 seconds, give me a background to that.
It's an emigration song, basically, and what it does is it deals with a couple leaving Ireland and going off, as many people did before, living in a different country, and then their granddaughter comes back to represent South Carolina in the Rose of Tralee contest. That's what the song is all about.
And you're involved in this, Shane?
I am, yeah.
Oh, hey, we got it right eventually. Shane Supple and, of course, Art Supple, many, many, many thanks for sharing that 60 minutes with us. Is there anything final you want to say before we
Thank you, Jerry, and I wish you all the best with your programme. And indeed, you know, it's very kind of you to invite us along and put us on a pedestal with, you know, with your people, as you call them.
Jerry's people.
Flattered to be here.
Another 60 years I'll be interviewing your son. Lads, thanks very much. All right.